And now here is part two of the Bud Hester interview.
So finally, once it went down and he came out of the room, he had a film can.
Yeah.
And he threw it down there.
Got a little angry.
It's driving me crazy, he said. It did. It was bothering
but
him.
But they knew that it would bother him. That's
yes.
why they
That's
did it.
That's why they did it, because Mark can't, he never could.
Not look up to see
and
who was
say something,
down.
Usually
right.
from people going by. But like I said, that was usually what was going on in the earlier days, anyway. That was always.
People pulling one another's
yes.
legs.
Because, you know, Roy Williams.
Right, the big musketeer.
Yeah, you know that he's the one that did a lot of presentations, you know, that they would get the boards and then they have to sell the boards to Walt.
Yeah.
So they got Roy to sell the boards because he was extroverted, you know, type of person, you know what I mean? He was
good at pitching the board.
Yeah, and he would read the boards real well, and he knew them, and they would teach him, and so he would be able to raise his voice and lower the voice and so forth. He was good at it. And Milt went in there and recorded the voice of mm-hmm. Roy doing this once.
Mm-hmm.
And because then he called Roy in, he said, listen to this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Roy never knew it, and Walt never said anything, but probably every other word was a swear word. When he presented the boards, he would get excited about it, but he would use swear words in there. And Walt would never mention anything about it, but so that was when they took the tape recording and played it back to him before he even knew he did.
Did he tone it down after listening to his tape?
I imagine he did. I don't know, but because you know how he was. He was sort of an extrovert type of
mm-hmm.
person.
Mm-hmm.
But that was going on most of the time, you know, that they were recording voices with each other too and trying to trick them on them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's basically is, but Clifford was a nice one to work with.
Cliff Norberg?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice people. He and his wife, you know, you go over there and, what did I do? I put in that gas line for the fireplace.
That's a nice guy.
So they said, do you like this sewing machine? Take it. She started hauling it out.
Yeah, Cliff's son's in the business, working over at Warner Brothers.
Oh.
So.
Yeah, that was something else. You remember when the Kimball and Call were all down in the bullpen there in
no A-wing. What happened that I didn't remember.
Oh, we did with the three of them, and they put a sign out on the door, KKK.
King Kimball and
a Call. Yeah, King Kimball and Call, and
KKK.
Put the KKK on the door. It did take long before, don't you do that again.
Now, well,
the KKK.
If you can yank somebody's leg, go and do it.
Well, they used to do that a lot of times too. They, you know, put signs in the elevators and things, guys. You know about in case of emergency, what to do?
No, I didn't know about that.
Oh, they went through a phase of that where everyone was trying to think of jokes and things in cartoons to put in the elevator. What? I guess Walt was the one that you got a kick out of it for a while, but then he said, you know, we got who was it? Ken Peterson to tell him to knock it off.
Got to be a little too much.
Yeah, sometimes they get wilder and wilder. Yeah,
topping one another.
Yeah, that went on in the elevator, and then it went on in the restrooms of the men's restrooms too. It went on.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, yeah. The same stuff.
But that was, like I say, those were creative days. That was. Everyone was very active and enjoying it. But
when do you think that started to change? That started to change after Walt passed away, or?
Oh yes, I would say probably. You know, I was fortunate at the studio, and I can't complain about that studio at all because they treated me beautifully.
Yeah.
I mean, I was, you know, when we had problems with our son, they helped us out tremendously. You know, he called me in. This is Ken Sealing. I don't know if you ever knew Ken.
I knew the name.
Early days. Yeah, he was very good at personnel, and he called me in because we got a notice from a collecting agency, because we ran into, what, $10,000 or something, whatever it was.
We were paying so much a month, and they wanted us to up the payments.
Pay all of it off. So I went into Ken and told him. And, he got mad at St. Joe's. And he phoned him up, and he was chewing him out. Because, you know, they have a lot of investment in St. Joe's, you know, Disney did.
So they backed off.
Yeah, and so it was, it's a matter of, and then he said, when I first started there, we wanted to buy a house in Burbank, because we were way over in Southwest L.A., and it was too far to travel over the hill and everything, so we wanted to buy a house, and we needed to be okayed. We went through the GI Bill, and I probably didn't make nearly the amount of money to qualify for it. So I went into Ken, and I told Ken, and Ken said, we'll get you qualified. We don't go by what you earn. We go by your potential. So he put down enough that we could buy a house, which was the first step. And then with this buddy problem, that was the second step that they helped us. So, I mean, and I think they were very good with us. And I think, too, they liked me because of the fact that I would give the tours. You know, there were two guys there, and then Youngquist was the other one. Mm-hmm. And then, then they wanted me to give tours. So, and the tours were directly in the early days when I was doing the tours. Because that was right there in D-Wing, even, and they would, you know, they'd fix up my room better, and I would have a moviola to show the people come in. But it was especially like when Walt had special people even come in. We had, what was the name? One of the vice presidents come in.
Richard Nixon? Of the United States, you're talking about?
Yeah.
Lyndon Johnson?
No, if you keep it up, I might get which one. But it was a matter, though, is that they would have me do it. In fact, Walt would come in a couple of times because I was doing tours even for the studio outside, you know, at evenings. And that was with Jack Buckley. And, you know, remember Buckley, he had a very good speaking voice. You know, he had a very nice, and he would do the talking, and I would do the sketching.
He was an effects.
Drawing. Yeah, and I would do the drawing of it. And so we would go out, because I remember one time, though, is that it was in the winter, and it was miserable out, and Walt came in and wanted us to go to give a show down there at Riverside Inn, and which is quite a way from the studio down, and it was drizzly, you know, it was a miserable day and miserable night. But it was a special friend, and that was Walt, our Pop Whitten of a university or a college down there. And so we, friend of Walt. So we really didn't want to go down. But one of the things, so Walt, of course, would always leave it up to us to know how much money to charge for it and what kind of a show to put on for him. And so we sat there for quite a while because we said, well, you know, if we charge them enough money, then they'll turn us down. Then we can tell Walt, well, they turned it down only because they didn't want to pay what we felt it was worth.
Right.
But so we raised it pretty high. And then we argued about who was going to phone down there to ask him for this.
Tell him what the price was.
Yes. And so Jack said, oh, okay, I'll phone. And so he phoned down, and they said, fine, come down.
Yeah.
So, of course, that made us mad. Not because of the fact that, you know, they accepted it, but we, now we felt as though we were underpaid all the other time.
Oh, my God. That's right. Gee, we could have gotten more.
Yeah, we should have gotten more all this other time. We've been wasting all the time. So, but that those things is what I liked about the studio, and I think, too, that helped me there, you know, at the studio. You know,
never got laid off.
Yeah, never lucky. Never got laid off in all those pictures.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Never.
Yeah, Bernie's been there 58 years. Yeah. He told me yesterday that he's never been laid off.
Yeah.
So a 58-year run, that's pretty incredible. So why don't we take a pause here and then we'll get back to it and finish up.
Okay.
So, the other story you're thinking
of. The other story I was thinking of was with working with Cliff Nordberg.
Yeah.
We were at the end of F Wing, and it's like Eric Larson and Bernie would be. You know, they had to go through my room to get to Norberg's.
Right.
So, but every morning Norberg would come in. You know, he would be very, very cheerful person. Very cheerful.
Yeah.
And good morning. How are you? You know, every morning. There's no morning that he wouldn't come through that way. And I always just make fun of him, says, in the sense of that, hey, you know, you, everything could be that cheerful because I know Ollie, his wife. And but he was. He had that positive attitude. And I was always very curious why he gets this so happy about going to work all the time. And that, in truth, probably is why he was so good at his work.
Mm-hmm.
Is that he was happy about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it flowed from him. It just came right out of him to do anything you want in action. And I finally came around to the conclusion what it was. He was one of the people that draw me, you think, you know, the advertisers, you know, draw mm-hmm. me. And then he drew some cartoons and he sent them to Disney and they hired him. And then now they put him to work. But when what he was doing at that time, even at a young age, he was working in the mines. Well, of course, coming out of a mine,
anything is better than
and
that.
Going to Disney,
everything's a holiday compared to that.
So that's why I think he had such a positive attitude, is because of. But Disney, I think in the early days at Disney's.
You're talking about the 50s.
Yeah,
and the early 60s.
I think it's. You know, of course, he was there before. You know, I mean, he was there in the 40s, but he was. I think that in. It would just you're happy about it. You're in those earlier days.
Because you remember the way it used to be when you were working in the mine.
Yeah, sure he would. And I'm sure that's why. And he was good. He was a nice person to work with. His whole problem was
he was always, and I had other people tell me this, that Cliff was always a terrific animator. And always underrated by the studio.
Oh, and they mistreat him. They mistreat him because he wouldn't even go in to ask for a raise anytime. You know, when Bluth Group came in, they made more money. They got stock options, and they didn't give it to Cliff. They never did.
And Cliff had been there since the 40s.
Yeah, yeah, and good at it. Good, fast. He was a fast animator.
Yeah. Well, he did some terrific stuff on Pete's Dragon.
Yeah, but he could do anything you want. But he was good. But you know, one of the things too is that I always, because at that time the studio was very thrifty minded in those days.
Right.
And I didn't say cheap, but thrifty
minded.
frugal. You know, but frugal, and that's because of the fact that it's you have to have a lot of money up front in order to do a production, and then some of those. Productions like I remember walking out after finishing Sleeping Beauty, and they saw it in the theaters. They're walking down the steps, and Walt said, "So that's what you guys spent $5 million on." Well, now we were laughing after that. He probably wished he had spent only $5 million on a lot of others now.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Since.
But it was a matter, though, is that there was a gardener there. I don't know, a Swedish gardener. One man for the studio.
Yeah.
Now, he would obviously, there. You know, all the flowers around in front of the building and on the, but in those days, it was the ball diamond.
Yeah.
And the croquet and the horseshoe pit and the volleyball.
Out at the corner, that was the whole corner, I think, was
the exercise area. And it was very nice to have that. Area, you know, when we were playing there, and Walt, in fact, would come out and play, you know, some baseball during the coffee breaks, even, you know, just to get loose, you know, to relax. And it was fun in there, but I got a kick out of the gardener. Now, the gardener, in the sense, is that he had to cut the lawn. And as thrifty-minded as the studio was, they gave him a lawnmower that I swear was only 12 inches wide. Very small little push lawnmower.
Mm-hmm.
And he would get out there and he would run with it. We would watch him out this window laughing. You know, he would be running with this little lawnmower back and forth, back and forth. Then he would quit for the day. And we would say, well, cause that's because he spends the rest of the day to do all of the gardening
of the studio.
Shrubbery,
all the rest of it.
So it's a matter then, we got to a point, well, hey, this is Tuesday, he should be here.
Right. Why isn't he at the halfway across the lawn?
He showed us almost which day it was by the sections he would cut. Then the next Monday, he would be cutting the next week.
So he cut the same sections
every day,
and then he'd knock off at a certain time and go do something else.
To do the others. But it would just show you, though, that today they would get a sit-down tractor that would cut that in a half hour,
you know,
if that lawn was still there. But that lawn gone, too. But
Lawn gone. Well, yeah. So now, what are your impressions? I wanted to try and get just some of your impressions of some of those other residents of D-Wing. And like Frank, you worked for Frank for a period of time.
Yeah.
What was Frank Thomas like?
Oh, he was good. You know, that, in fact, Ollie and Frank, their styles were even a little different.
Yeah.
You get used to the styles of them. But like Jules Svensson would draw like Milt. He had that same feeling of Milt's. And Frank was, in fact, back both of them. You know, they were from Stanford. But they analytical. And mm-hmm. their work was a little bit more drawing stiff-wise,
yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's, you know, because they were good animators. I'm not saying they were top animators. All nine of those men were very talented.
Sure.
Very, you know, had great respect for them. And like that, I think that's why I liked Milt so much. I had respect because that guy's loaded with talent.
Yeah.
You know, I say that when I was at the union office, even kidding about it, I said, you know, when you run across some of these guys that have such talent, don't you hate them?
Yeah.
You wonder, now, where does it come from?
Why do they have it and I have less of it?
Why? What is it that you know, I've read every book imaginable that doesn't help me.
Yeah, exactly.
You wonder where, you know, but Frank was, you know, well, all of them, they always animated rougher.
Right.
Milt was a little bit cleaner. I say that in a sense, but they style changed too, you know, because they were getting to a point where lines were, couple of lines would be permissible.
Mm-hmm.
And other than because in the earlier days, of course, you could do it real rough, and by the time they ink it, it's down to a single line.
That had to change when Xerox came
along. Yeah, so Xerox changed, and they asked you to draw a little cleaner, and the nine old men, most of them, wouldn't clean it up quite enough to go into final production, so that's why they still, and they had a good, like Gail Oliver is a very good cleanup man and a good artist too, to do Frank's work. And so it's a matter that the styles have changed so drastically all through it.
Now you were never Frank's assistant directly, or were
no,
you?
No, I would pick up some. I was assisting Frank now and then, but not his assistant.
Oh, I see.
Meaning that Dale was slower.
Dale Oliver, yeah. Well, he would read. I mean, Bernie was telling me that Dale would read, or Dale Bear also told me that, you know, that Dale Oliver would redraw Frank's animation to put it on model or to give it.
Yeah,
give it,
well, everyone had to dimension. Do it. Depends on who's they're going to go by. You know, especially like Keys. I was a key.
Yeah.
Stan was a key. Oliver was a key. Stanchfield was a key later time than what I was there, but meaning that a key is someone, though, that if you get Frank's work here and you get Milt's work,
mm-hmm.
how are you going to put those two together to make the same character?
Right. So how did you?
That's the king. Well, I'll tell you right now, it's safer if you were to take Milt's and
yeah.
make Frank's look more like Milt. You'd be better off.
So you were pushing Frank's where you had to. You'd push Frank's
right.
more toward style. Milt.
But see, then when you're doing something that's on a bigger scale, there's an incidental character that maybe three or four or five animators, and these animators are not the nine old men. There's the other the mass of the animators at the studio, when you take those and you have to deal with them to get them all to look like one, that's where a problem comes in.
Right.
And but it's a matter, though, is that too, is that in the industry, I don't think they would get into the studio unless they have a lot of talent.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot of the younger generation that I saw in those classes that I had at the union office, they were talented. Now, that's, you know, because of the, I think economy-wise, a guy could have a lot of a talent and then to get into the studio to earn $26 a week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, back in the day.
You would go elsewhere. So you weren't, you know, it was an honor to be able to get in there, I think, and to have, but...
Mitchner told me once that he had to keep, you know, he had his gas, he was supervising a gas station when he started the studio, mm-hmm. and he kept working that job nights to make ends meet, because he wasn't making a lot when he started at you know, Disney in the 50s.
You don't. And I know that we used to joke, because there used to be a paper boy that sold the papers right there at the where the old time clock was, you know.
At the time shack.
Yeah, and we used to say, well, he can cash our checks for us. Right. You know, but it's... Yeah, in fact, it was Chuck Williams that... The first check he got, I don't think he ever cashed. I think he just put it on the wall. He says it's hardly worth cashing.
You know, but, yeah. Well, things you can laugh now, but you
things were thrifty, like I say, in those days. They were
frugality.
Yeah, and but like I said, they were fair to me, and you know, and I enjoyed it real well there. Why irritated Milt though? I had a Jaguar and he had a Morgan.
Yeah.
And he wanted to park his car, of course, in the shed.
Yeah.
And so he got a place to park the car in the shed, and it's about six cars down.
Yeah, from the front.
Right out the door almost, you know, right out where the time clock was. And so when I get at the studio, I used to park the old car outside. I wouldn't even pay the... Was it $30 a month or something for parking?
Inside the studio.
Yeah, to park in there and to get a shed. So I got a Jaguar. So I said, oh, I'm not going to park this on the street, so I'm going to park it in the studio. So I go in there and I said, I'm going to park on the studio. So they said, fine, Marina, where do you want to park? I said, well, I like the shed if you have a shed. So we have a shed space for you. We'll get it. And I was... this side of Milt, closer to the entrance.
So you were closer than he was. So was was he a little miffed at that?
Right, that's what I said. We were mostly joking about it, because, I mean, who cares? But he said, as long as it's closer than... what's the guy who used to drive a little blue one there? I don't know if you remember
that. I can't remember.
He sends in the business, too, but... it was a matter that as long as, because he could never stand. He said, you used to always ask. He says, everyone find out what he does around the studio here.
Somebody someday will find out.
I forgot his name.
Are there any others like Ollie? Ollie was okay to work for?
Oh, yeah. Ollie is a sweet person. He's a nice, congenial, very easy, helps instruct him. You know, that's one thing that Milt, he would rather tell you your stuff is bad, but you find out how to prove it. I think Ollie would help you to improve more. Of course, like I say, the biggest one of that would work you more is Lounsbury. He works with guys much closer and to create them, you know, to make them better.
So Lounsbury, you would credit as the guy that really helped bring people along.
Yeah, I think he's the one that did...
It was easy to work
I don't think
for.
There's been ever an assistant who would make animation from Frank Thomas. I think there were, well, Ollie, I think, did. I think
got promoted
what's his name,
Joel animator.
Craig or something that came up through him. Then he went into the morgue, remember?
Yeah.
And Eric, of course, Eric.
Eric became the grand old teacher there and really brought all of the new crowd along in the 70s. He pretty much left animation and became an instructor.
Yeah.
And
in Stanchfield.
And Walt Stanchfield also.
Yeah, he did.
He left a whole lot of notes.
It's funny, is that, you know, the little thing I had at the union office, Ed Hansen came in once and said, what do you talk about in those classes, you know? And I said, well, I have a thing here with my, you know, itinerary, what I go through and everything on the classes, and I showed him, and he wanted to copy it, and I said, fine, you know, I don't care. And he came to me and says, you know, those classes, he said, that you give there, would you mind giving a couple of them here to the group that came through? Now, this group is the one that eventually outplaced Bluth.
Right, the ones that stayed behind.
Yeah, but there was a lot of talent there, you know, but the Bluth time was really a changing of a lot. Because that was Ron Miller, and he just put everything into them.
Oh, yeah. Well, they were banking on Don becoming the next Woolly Ratherman and running the place.
Yes.
And then Don said, I'm leaving. Bye.
Yeah.
And I remember all that vividly. I remember all that. Because Don trained me, and I understood that he was unhappy. Don didn't want anybody to tell him what to do. He wanted to be his own guy.
Well, that was his downfall, in more or less. He had thinking of a Disney Brothers.
Yeah.
And he wanted the Bluth. So every time he would start a studio, it had to be Bluth something.
Bluth. Right, Bluth Sullivan. Bluth.
So he
Bluth,
had that.
Whatever.
He had that, and he had that thing that he can do everything better than everyone else. That was his downfall. You know, you're much better to get an animator like Norberg to do your animation for you. I tell you right now, there's no way that he could do the animation that Norberg can do for him, much cheaper and faster.
Yeah, with less attitude.
Right. And so, I mean, it's Walt made a good studio because he hired the right men to do it for him.
Right.
Now, he knew he wasn't he said that, you know, he says, if I were to apply for a job today in the studio, I would never get in. He said that.
Himself, yeah.
And that was true, because you've seen his artwork. It's not that good. But he has the talent, and his talent is to hire the right ones to do it.
And he had a knack for story.
Oh, yeah.
He had
a whole feeling of what people want.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that's what,
an important quality to have. I guess to wrap this up, a couple of things. You animated there in D-Wing a bit, didn't you? Because when you guys were picking up scenes,
when they were when they're overloaded, and there's certain things that you want to animate, get done. They want to get done. Then they will call you in to, and sometimes they would key it for you, do one or two drawings.
And then you
do the rest in the animation, yeah.
Yeah.
They would do that, yeah.
So you would animate there, and you also animated for Clampett at Snowball, didn't you?
Yes, yeah. Actually, as far as the overall atmosphere, that was the best 1 year I had in the animation.
That's when you left Disney's for a year.
Yeah, I went there.
Talk about that a little bit, and then we'll wrap up.
Well, Clampett came in one day when we were working there, and I was working right next door to
Bob Clampett.
Bob Clampett, and I was working right next door to Lou Appett. Now, Lou had worked with Clampett in the very early days.
Yeah, so, Warners.
Yes, and he knew very well Lou and Clampett. And when he came in there, and this was time we were slow on work, very slow on work. We're lucky that we're still sitting there, you know.
Right.
But it was a matter, though, is that when he came in and he said, can you recommend anyone else that might come over to a studio if he opens up the studio? And Lou came in the room and said, would you be interested in going with a Clampett doing Beanie and Cecil's. And I said, well, that, you know, sounds interesting or anything, but I want to talk to Andy about it first,
right,
you know.
Andy Eggman.
Yeah, so I went in and talked to Andy. He said, well, right now they're basically at a slow time, and it might be good if you want to come back, and you'll be welcomed. So I did. I went in there to do
it. This was about 1960, 61.
Yeah, so there, yeah. And Iwa was, not Iwa, Willie Ito was the layout man there. He's talented. He's good. Good layout man. But they had a couple of good talent people there.
And where was Clampett's studio?
Over in Seward Street.
In Hollywood?
Yeah, over on the other side, yeah. And it was one of the best ones because it was, you know, Clampett started something new, too, that was interesting. He had a bell alarm go off when his coffee break.
Oh, like recess.
Right. And then it would come on again, time to go back to work. Well, Clampett asked us about this, and we said, no, we don't like it.
Really?
Don't like to be on the bell. And he says, you know, we didn't punch a card, we didn't go on the bell or anything. He said, well, will you do me a favor? For a few weeks, try it and mm-hmm. see how it would work out. Well, the bell would ring, and we had freedom.
Mm-hmm.
That was a great atmosphere coming from Disney's no. You know, because there was no bell. But if it was 10 o'clock, even though you go get your coffee, they didn't want to see you in the hall drinking coffee.
Right.
So you always had this, well, I'm staying in my room.
Drinking a coffee there.
Yeah, attitude, and I'm never leaving my desk almost.
Yeah.
But at Clampett's, when that bell rang, it was funny. I mean, because of the fact that the president of the company is Stoner.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another guy there, I forgot what his name was. I'll think of it later, but they used to put toy guns on.
And what would they do with those?
And they would go, when that bell rings, they would sneak around the corners and everything to see who can outdraw who coming around the corner. Then they get points for it. Yeah, it was, like I say, it was sort of a nut house. But it was fun. Everyone had fun with it. And I remember, in a sense, too, when that bell goes on, and Lou Abba was a bigger instigator of it, because he would always drop by, you know, in Studio City there, they have a couple of very good Jewish bakeries.
Mm-hmm.
And he would come in every day. We would chip in, you know, eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But every day with all these goodies, and they put them on the table, and everyone from the whole studio would be at the table.
Mm-hmm.
You work with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think it was just a different atmosphere. It was so free and fun atmosphere. And yet we had to sit down and you animate, what is it? I think it was about 75 feet a week there, 80 feet.
You were animating 75 feet a week?
Yeah, and that was a lot less than what H&B was going, you know, up to 200 feet a week.
There were guys that were animating a short a week, two shorts a week.
Yeah.
But a lot of stock.
Well, I'm going to say, if you're doing a filmation, you can do a lot of footage.
Yeah, because you reuse.
That's the only one that I ever knew that used to have who was used to run, and the background would put you a plane car, you don't have to pan it.
Oh, so you were animating 75 feet a week at Clampett, and you probably did what? You did about 25 half-hour animated shows?
I think it was a half series, which is, you know, a half year, and that would be, yeah, 26
episodes.
Yeah, 26, but yeah, half hour.
So you were over there for a year working on that show? That show is still well remembered. Why did they only do one year?
They were going to bring it out again, and then they wanted to, they had problems, the Clampett did, and it was just never, and then, you know, she tried to get it, what's her name, Jody or something, she tried to get it back out, you know, she tried it again to make the animation studio going again.
Right.
And it was a flop, it just couldn't get it on.
So you were over there for the better part of a year.
I basically, it was almost understood with Andy that I would be back within the 1 year, so I was almost down to the day of the 1 year.
And then you swung back and probably went back to work on Dalmatians or Sword in the Stone.
Oh,
Sword in the Stone.
I don't remember. I think I came back with, I was going to say, I think, because Clifford is the one that I think I worked with again when I came back. I'm not sure of that even.
But you like the Clampett.
Oh, I think Clampett was, you know, he was very good.
And how was he as a boss?
Yeah, he was good. He was good. But, you know, you saw when you do, you animate a scene and then he would, in orange on the folder, put "see me" on it. Because mm-hmm. you always have a correction to do something about it, which you always expect that after a while. You
sure.
can expect every scene that he'd... And it's like a scene that you have where I'm throwing around, you know, character around, it comes close to you and back, mm-hmm. and close to you. It was... And he'd always say, "I want you to go more extreme with it." And then you would animate a character a certain size, and then you would truck down to it. But he had a thing, you know, working at Warner's, they didn't use the camera as much as you do at Disney's.
Right.
You could do everything at Disney's with a camera, you know, in Xerox and the pigs and the barge. You can work with a lot of stuff. But so they wanted to make it always simple. And he wanted to see it, meaning that he couldn't visualize it. He said, "Well, I'm going to truck in on it. I'll get closer to him on it." But he said, "I'd like to see it bigger."
Wants to see how it's going to look.
Yeah, so then you get used to, when you do animate it, to do it more of what the way it's going to be, rather than what you can do with the camera.
But he was a pretty good creative mind and a pretty good boss. And
yeah. Of course, he, you know, when you... These are from the Three Wise Kids. They, you know, that... There was, of course, at Warner Brothers at the time, and what they called Termite Hill and everything.
Termite
Terrace. Two young directors. They're very young directors.
Well, and Clampett was one of them.
And
He was in his early 20s.
He was one, and then Chuck Jones was the other one, and then Frizz Freleng.
He was a little older.
Yeah. But they were two. Clampett used to say that, you know, that was my idea, and they stole it from me. But you can talk to every one of them.
And they'd all say
Chuck,
somebody
they all
else,
say they everyone
somebody
stole
it
from him.
It was my idea.
Yeah.
Well, that's so okay. Well, I think we've done a pretty good job of the residents of Disney's D Wing and what the times were like at that point. And what was your last project at Disney? You worked on Pete's Dragon, and you worked a little bit on the Fox and the Hound, or did you?
Fox and the Hound was the I was keying it for Xerox at that time, meaning that they wanted to have the Hound a gray and the Fox the orange Xerox line. So when they did a couple of drawings of those characters, and then I was keying the drawings in from different positions and drawings, and then we sing it to Xerox and then to ink and paint and see what it would look like on that line.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I quit.
Right about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just started on it.
And my last wrap-up question of all the stuff that you worked on or stuff that you didn't work on, what did you find in animation? What are the five features or five shorts or just five individuals that kind of inspired you the most in animation? Do you have a big five?
Yeah, I would say artistically, I was very impressed, and I thought it was good, but a little bit of a story and other things too, is Sleeping Beauty.
Sleeping Beauty.
That was most artistic, I think, film and animation ever made.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Davis did a beautiful job of moving her, like up the staircase, floating, just... I think artistically, the whole thing, animation-wise, color-wise, everything of it was pretty, I think. But I think either the story was old or whatever it was, it wasn't as successful as the others.
Right.
As far as the others go, then, of course, I always enjoyed basically Cinderella because of the mm-hmm. humor to it, of the mice, the way that the humor worked. As far as animation-wise, of all of them, I think the Wind in the Willow and Toad's Hall.
Yeah. No, that's one of my favorite books of all time.
Yeah, I just have a feeling in animation that's what animation is for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but because you're always fighting animation, like I say, the artistically Sleeping Beauty, but it might have been just as easy to do it in live action and get the same results.
Yeah.
But Wind in the Willow, no. You can only do that one way.
You can only do that with animation.
Especially when you get around to Toad's Hall in Zero, you know, the humor and the action. And especially, I always remember the one line about the attorney is about, you got to do it to the horse, remember?
Right.
Zero. You got to do it the right way. And then that's when he asked the attorney, he said, what is the right way? And he says, I don't know, but well, I thought I had you there. I don't remember that. Or,
remember all that, sort of like Milt saying, go do this.
Yeah,
go do this drawing the right way.
Yeah, do it the right way, yeah.
And your other three would be?
Well, I would say basically as far as an animation, it was a new process way, and I was involved in it more. It was 101 Dalmatians.
Yeah.
I say involved more because of the fact that that Xerox was used tremendously. I mean, you wouldn't animate, you know, that number of dogs running down a staircase. You had to figure it out, how can you do it animation-wise without having to draw it.
Yeah.
So that was more of a problem, you know what I mean? It was a challenge, more of a challenge. I like mechanics. I think because that's what Milt would do to me, you know, Milt would say, I want this, that, and this is what I want out of it. You can work it out. Even on walks and things, I would do it for
him. So you got to do all of it.
Yeah, because that was more of my forte, and I like it. So I like to know how to work
your
the camera.
Your engineering comes in.
Yeah, use the camera. But as far as the Disney shows, they're far cry today, I think, from them. But you know, like my son said, even that editor at, you know,
sure, Mark DreamWorks. DreamWorks Animation,
and he said that if you were to have a Cinderella today,
mm-hmm.
the kids would either fall asleep or walk out.
Yeah.
So the timing is so different, and I don't care for the timing of the films as much as in animation as it used to be.
Right.
In animation, it was telling you something with the animation itself.
Mm-hmm.
The film today, the animation is only to get it from here to there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way they want to seem to move it. You know what I'm saying? It's good, I'm saying, and computer-generated imaging is great. They can get it very, very nice, very good three-dimensional out of it and everything, but to me, it's the timing that is still, I'm just too old-fashioned for it.
Yeah, you know, the old hand-drawn stuff.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to slow down to see the beauty of the action rather than just simply motion. You know, when you see today's animation, it's an improved Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah.
You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. It's
a Hanna-Barbera, but it's just improved image-wise.
Yeah, I understand.
But I was very impressed by DreamWorks' How to Train a Dragon.
Yeah, that the story of that was tremendous.
Well, and two, it's slowed down with the character. The boy was calm.
Yeah, well, that was my favorite animated film of last year, which I've said multiple times. Yeah. Probably one of my favorite films of last year, because I just thought it had heart. And it had a nice character arc.
Well, it took time to explain something, and the boy would be that calmness to it.
Yeah.
You know, you always in animation, it used to be that in order to show an action of one thing, a complementary action of the other makes it more so.
Mm-hmm.
They say that in quick animation at Snowball.
Mm-hmm.
It was their Clampett stuff. That you don't build up or you don't keep a rhythm all the way through it. If
mm-hmm.
you keep a rhythm all the way through it, it's blah, 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 that's it. But if you go dum 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 dum, it's more impressive.
If you vary the rhythm.
Yeah, it's more impressive. It changes you, your whole concept of something. So today it's a little bit harder for me to adjust to really a lot I like to see on the screen. But,
and give me one more example of one of your favorites, and then we're done.
Well, I don't, you know, because to me, I think would impress me because it was the first real picture I worked on was Lady and the Tramp.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, something else I just can't help but to throw in is that Milt being a key artist of almost everything that comes through, you know,
mm-hmm.
he keyed a lot of it. They were working on 101 Dalmatians. And he was still, I was working with him when we were doing Julie Andrews thing, you know.
The penguin.
And, yeah. The and
animated sequence in Mary Poppins.
Mary Poppins, yeah. And so we were a little bit late off of that. But it was a matter, though, is that they've already gone on with, 101 Dalmatians. And they were doing, I think her name was Anita, that woman, the mm-hmm. live-action woman. And they were doing her a certain style. Now, here, Milt was just coming off of working with Julie Andrews, and he thought she was fantastic. You know, I think he had a crush on her.
Right.
And when he came off on to 101 Dalmatians, he said, no, she shouldn't look like that. I'll do it. Mm-hmm. So, but they left that in the picture. You'd probably notice that. Beginning mm-hmm. of 101 Dalmatians, Anita is completely different looking than later. And that's because he drew Anita, and look at her, she looks like Julie Andrews.
Yeah, actually, she does look like Julie Andrews.
Yeah, because he had a crush with her.
Okay. Well, I think we've pretty much gone the circuit, and Mr. Hester, I thank you for your time and for your memories.
Fine, thank you.